the volume.
Hey guys, it's the Sessions presented by FanDuel. It might be cold, but the sports calendar is heating up, baby, and there's no better place to get in on the action than with FanDuel. The app is safe, secure, and so, so easy to use. FanDuel always has exclusive offers, boosts, and more. And when you win, you're gonna get paid real fast. FanDuel has lots of ways to play, like with the spread, money line, over, under, team totals, player props, and so much more. You can jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting. And you can combine multiple bets from the same game in a same game parlay to try out the same game parlay plus. Get in on that. And FanDuel is now live in Maryland, y'all. So use the promo code Renee, R-E-N-E-E, and download the FanDuel app today to start making every moment more. Disclaimer, 21 plus in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG for Colorado, Iowa, Minneapolis, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Virginia. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat for Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT for Indiana. 1-877-770-STOP for Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org for Maryland. Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789 for Tennessee. Visit ksgamblinghelp.com for Kansas. 1-800-522-4700 for Wyoming or visit www.1800gambler.net for West Virginia. Hey guys, welcome to the best of the Sessions. What we have done is we've combined the best of Tuesday's episode and Thursday's episode, mashed them together to give you a beautiful little audio gift for your ear holes. We have some awesome, awesome guests on the show. Cannot thank people enough for taking the time to come hang out with me. Give me a little bit of their time. We give you a little bit of that. We all get to hang out and enjoy it, learn a little bit about each other. So it's really cool to mash these all together, and you guys can get those little abbreviated highlights of both of the interviews throughout the week. Also, of course, if you want to listen to the full lengths, you can do that. They all exist. Just make sure to check out all things from the Volume Podcast Network. Like, subscribe, turn on those notifications, all that good stuff. But let's get into it. Here's the best of the Sessions.
Anything I need to know? This is a free-flowing conversation. This is an interview. Did you research my life? What are we working with?
I researched a few things. I've got a couple things written down. We're just going to bullshit. We're just going to bullshit a little bit. But first things first, Sanjay, I would just like to give us both a shout out for owning these beautiful fake plants to just really spice up the background.
Where did it go? There it is. Yes. thanks to my wife. This has made it through every house that I've lived in.
Hell yes. You know what? You've really got to appreciate the greenery in the house until you realize they still need to be watered and maintained, and then they all die on me. So I've just, who has the time? I don't. You don't.
I see some dust. I see some dust on there though.
Yeah, this could use a little Swiffer jet situation.
Yes.
As we jumped on here, were you chugging a milk?
I was chugging a protein shake. So I opened the box, but this is the one that had no label around it. So I was like, collector's item or something, you know? What the heck?
Maybe. I don't know. That was bold of you to just down it. It's just like the...
That's how you do it.
Just straight shoot it. Here we go.
That's how I drink my vodka too, Renee. So, you know, one and the same.
Maybe just mix the protein shake and the vodka. Actually, that sounds like... That sounds like you would shit your pants 100%. Nobody needs to.
Hey, are we on right now? Is this?
Yes, yes.
Oh! I thought you were like waiting for an intro or something. Great. This is great.
We just do it. I do the intro afterwards. Usually when I have a little peace and quiet in the house. So sometimes my daughter joins me and then all hell breaks loose. But anyways, no, we're in it. We're in the interview. We're doing it. How are you doing? How do you function? I feel like... You and I, when we were both at WWE, I didn't really work with you all that much because you came in, you're busy doing your thing, I'm busy doing my thing. So we didn't really cross paths all that much. Now we're fucking in it to win it together, buddy.
Yes, I love it.
I do too.
Are you having fun, Renee?
I am having fun. And the thing that I love is like, I love working with you. I love when Don Callis jumps in on some things as well. I think like the backstage vibe is actually a ton of fun because it's like that collaborative environment that we didn't have before. There's a little bit of panic in the eyes of like, what are we doing? What are we accomplishing here? How much time do we have?
We always pull it off.
We always pull it off. We always pull it off. We're always begging you to just give us like an extra 30 seconds, which you more often than not can come up with. Thank you for that.
I remember last week, you guys, what happened, Sanjay? You ran away like something important with like, you went to put out a fire or something.
Yes.
And I came back and I said, I got a 30 seconds.
We were literally in the middle of about to go live. And Sanjay just, I've never seen a human being move that fast. I was like, oh my God, something bad must have just happened. I thought you were running out to the ring. I did not know what was happening. And yeah, you went to the truck, you got our truck, or maybe you went to Tony. You got us 30 extra seconds, which we needed. So thank you.
What I always tell people, they always ask me, you know, what are your first questions? How do you function? Well, it's time management. So I knew I had a window of like 30 seconds to go get this done. And bam, did I get it done.
You know, we were sitting down to do the interview with Soraya for Rampage. And we're about to do it. And I can't remember who it was that walked up to you, but you're like talking to them about the finish of their match. Then you also still had to go out and do your own promo in the show. Like, how do you juggle doing all these things and keep your head straight?
I really don't know. I guess it comes natural. So when I said time management, you know, you know, kind of trying to be funny, but yes, it is time management. I kind of prioritize what needs to get done. I want to shout out to my team. Those guys are the best. Jeremy, Giancarlo, Danze. I mean, those guys, I lean on them. And what I've always, I had this conversation with one of them yesterday was, look, guys, I do my best to give you as much opportunity to empower yourselves to get shit done. That's the only way that things can operate here. I do my best to kind of give the information that needs to be given, empower these guys to, you know, go out and tackle what needs to be tackled. But a lot of it is time management. You know, I always joke that I can't walk down the hallway trying to go to the bathroom without like 10 people. But Sanjay.
Because so you're the guy. Just, everybody knows it. Like, not only are you like the guy that does have the answers, but you also get shit done. You're very effective.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That seriously, that means a lot because ever since I stopped wrestling, it was a weird transition. Okay, now I've stopped wrestling. I'm working backstage. Is this really what I want to do? You know, that sort of thing. And quickly I learned, yes, I love doing what I do backstage. I'm more fulfilled professionally working in a backstage capacity than I did, you know, going out there and wrestling.
I mean, you still get to scratch that itch, though.
I do. And that's a whole different topic that we can kind of get into as well, because I never thought that I'd be in front of a camera ever again. But I feel fulfilled in helping people and getting them to where kind of where I got to, where I got to be on TV. I got to be successful. I got to kind of check off these boxes through my professional career. And I want to help others kind of be fulfilled in that capacity and help them accomplish that. And I think I have done that now since, I mean, I haven't wrestled now in 5 years. So for the past 5 years, I've just been immersed in kind of just cultivating talent, new talent, existing talent, just kind of showing them the ropes and getting shit done, like you said.
Because even like from my experience as well, like coming into AEW and like I am on a talent contract, but I also have a producer contract as well. So it's cool to be able to use all of those skills that you've acquired over the years. And like, I don't know if you feel the same way, but when you go from like kind of like essentially just being on camera, like, you know, when I'm hosting shows and whatever, obviously a lot of prep work goes into those and I'm working with the producers, et cetera, but I'm essentially there as like on-air talent. But it's all of these skills that you acquire while doing that, that now in AEW, I'm like, wow, I actually kind of know quite a bit about how to make these work and what makes sense and what the shot should look like and what the blocking should be like and storyline wise, how things make sense. It is actually far more fulfilling than maybe I even thought that it was going to be.
Which is kind of what I experienced. So it has been now, in 2012 was when I first kind of worked in the office at TNA at Impact Wrestling. So for 10 years now, like a lot of people, especially if you work with me in WWE, where I was just a match producer. And that is kind of what WWE is, where, okay, this is your job. And I kind of, which kind of, was part of the reason why I wanted to kind of quit, where I was like, look, I think I know in my heart of hearts, I can do more than just be a match producer. Because before WWE, I was at Impact, and what you see now, I did that at Impact. And so I had all these experiences, and I got to WWE, it was like, okay, you have this one segment and you're going to produce it. And then that's it. And I was like, yeah. But I see all this other stuff where I feel like I can contribute. And I wasn't feeling as fulfilled there. But yes, it is so fulfilling to kind of just be a part of every little thing. And like I said, at the end of the day, it to me, it's solely being able to help talent.
And it's nice to be busy like that too. Like, even though there's times that I'm like, Sanjay, can you just take 5 minutes so that I can take 5 minutes? I see you just doing all of these things. And it's, you know, it's great to be busy. And, you know, it's kind of like that old adage, like you want to get something done, ask a busy person to do it. And that's exactly the case with you. But to actually be able to like do all those things, execute them. And yeah, we always pull it off. Like there's always figuring out a way to do it, whether time is against you.
Not just pull it off, but we're hitting a home run, Renee.
You're absolutely right. You're right. So on like the producing side of things, how do you like switch gears when you're working with everybody putting together their promos, their matches, whatever, but then you also still have your own promo to go out there and do? How do you make time for that?
It's funny you say it because a couple of days ago, and I don't know when this is going to air, but a couple of days ago, we were in Indianapolis and it was two segments before I had to go out and Jeff Jarrett walked by. He said, "Hey, man, you know what you're going to say?" And I was like, shit, I totally forgot. I got to come up with this promo. So I said, OK, well, let me go get with Max. And I got with those guys and I just kind of threw something together in my head, but it was like that late in the game where I was like, oh shit, I forgot I got to cut a promo out there. So, okay, what do I got to say? It helps that I know where the stories are going and it helps that I know what the story is about. I think if I didn't have that, I would have that talent anxiety that we see always backstage of where's this going? What am I doing? What am I going to say? Whereas I have I'm privy to all of this stuff that they might not be privy to. So it helps me kind of formulate what I'm going to say when I'm out there or where I'm trying to go.
You don't have time to overthink it. I think a lot of times when it's like, you have this promo on the show all day. This is what I want to say. This is the out, blah, 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 blah. When you don't really have time to overthink it like that, you're just doing it. There's something special about doing it.
Absolutely. Just doing it. And I'll use an example. Heading into Full Gear, me, Lethal, and Suttnam did this Road 2 promo to hype up the match with Sting and Darby versus Lethal and Jeff. And it got some love and traction online. And I was getting tagged in a lot of stuff. And I was like, what? Whoa, people like this? I literally gave it zero thought. I literally looked at Lethal and I said, do you want to say something? He said, yeah, I'll go off of what you got. So I said, okay, Giancarlo just hit record and I just spewed it out. And then, you know, a week later, it airs on Road 2, or actually it was a countdown show to Full Gear. And you know, everybody's tagging me online. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. I guess that was good. So, I it's different. It's different kind of ways that people prepare for promos. A lot of people, I know a lot of people that work at AEW will write out their stuff, have it memorized, time it to the T, and know exactly what they want to say. I just never have been like that. Give me some bullet points. And like I said, thankfully, I know where things are going and I can kind of just riff.
What are sort of the pros and cons of those two things? I think I have only worked for WWE up until this point. That's the only version of wrestling that I know and how that functions in your handed scripts. And we know how that goes. But now being at AEW and there's not that, there are definitely pros and cons to both sides. How do you kind of see that?
It will kind of depend on who the person is. At AEW, there's, and I've told Tony this a lot of times, hey, you know, there's a lot of people on our roster that don't need that extra time to kind of formulate what they're going to say. They can just kind of go and they know exactly what they want to say when the camera turns red. Where there's other people that need extra time to prepare, to know what they're talking about, I think it just depends on who that person is. My duration as a talent, you know, 18, 19 years I was never handed anything. This is what you need to get across. Great. So that is kind of how I trained myself as a professional wrestler and cutting promos, whereas people that go through the WWE system don't really get that luxury. So then I remember your first day and I went up to you and I said, hey, how's it feel to have no script?
Yes.
And it's like, fuck, feels great.
So right before I was going out to do the promo with the Acclaimed on Rampage, and you came up and we were doing that promo with Keith Lee, and you came up and you gave me all the information that we needed, and then you walked off. I can't remember who was standing next to me. It might have been Billy Gunn, maybe. And he was just like, That's just how you do it, right? Like, you give me all the information that I need. Cool, you got that. You went off to do your thing. I went to do a thing with the Acclaimed and then went to do the promo with Keith Lee.
Well, Renee, to me, it's like, if we are all here working here, you have a certain talent that has brought you here. So if I don't have that trust in you as a talent to be able to do your job, as long as I am empowering you with the information that you need to know, I should 100% believe that you can pull off whatever it is I'm telling you. You just need that information. So once that information is conveyed, that's why I tell my team, here's the information that we need. Now, you guys all know what to do. Y'all are so talented when it comes to talent production. Everybody is here for a reason. So let those people go out and showcase their talents and why they are here, rather than micromanaging every single word and movement.
Thank God. Thank God for that. Okay, so that brings me to my next question. Working with Tony Khan, how has your relationship with Tony been from day one to where you guys are at now? I mean, essentially, I don't know if using right-hand man is necessarily the word, but I mean, you guys obviously work so closely together. How has that relationship developed over the time?
I don't think that Tony has like a right hand man. You know, I think that, you know, we're kind of a team. It's me and I really gotta you know, talk about QT and Tony Schiavone and Pat Buck. You know, I think that you know, we kind of have figured out a great way to work with each other and complement each other. And Tony kind of knows what all of our strengths are, so he kind of leans on us on those things. And obviously, Tony's you know, the man when it comes to booking the shows and seeing, having that long-term vision. So all together, I think we're, you know, just a great team.
Hell yeah.
You know, I remember having a conversation with Tony. I said, hey, man, I know you know me as a wrestler, but other than that, I don't believe you know me from a hole in the wall, but this is what I do. This is what I have done. And this is what I am that I can excel at. And I didn't even want to say, hey, these are the holes that I see here. I just said, hey, look, this is what I can do. And I've done it for years. So whenever you feel like you need to utilize me, bam, put me in, coach. And a lot of people don't realize, but that work at AEW, but I came to AEW to do basically like one job as a producer. And then, you know, 6 months later.
Wait, what was that job as a producer? What was that? Was it something specific?
I had come in to help with the backstage shots, being a backstage producer. In wrestling, you have a TV producer, which I kind of feel like I'm a TV producer on backstage. But then when I put the headset on, I'm a wrestling producer. They wanted, hey, we've got enough coaches and wrestling producers. Can you please help us backstage? And I did that at Impact. So boom, I came in to kind of help the pre-tape process and the backstage elements of the show. And then quickly, 3 to 6 months later, you know, I'm sitting in Tony's office all day. Yeah. So I don't know how that blossomed. And I think internally, and you know, I probably had this conversation with my wife when I said, hey, I want to quit WWE and go to another place, was, hey, let me get here and organically everything will fall into place. I'm not going to push anything, nor am I going to insert myself into where I don't need to be inserted. It will organically happen. And it did organically happen where, Sanjay, you have formatted, timed, and written television. Take a look at this. But just stuff like that. So kind of evolved to working side by side with Tony. And I love it, man. I always tell people I've worked with a bunch of billionaires at this point. So
is he your favorite billionaire?
Tony? 100%. He's my favorite billionaire of all time. But I've worked with all these, you know, powerful people in wrestling, these billionaires, and he is like the, and maybe it helps that we're the same age. We're 6 months apart. We have a similar background. You know, his dad's a Pakistani immigrant that came here. My parents are Indian immigrants. There's a relation there. It's funny, when I first met Shad, I would just speak Punjabi with him all the time. So you know, I feel like those kind of things brought us a little closer. I don't know, man. It just blossomed. And I love it. I love it. I love working with Tony just because he is he's just so approachable and he's just like a dude. He's just a cool dude.
100%. Speaking Punjabi, how often do you get to like speak Punjabi and get to like flex that?
Every time I'm with Satnam, every Wednesday.
Oh, you guys do? Oh, I've never seen you guys speaking Punjabi together.
You know, obviously his English is good. He's been here since 13 or 14. He's lived here since, you know, experiencing the NBA and whatnot. But I understand, I kind of empathize with him in that he is still in a strange place. He's still surrounded by people that, you know, his sister finally got her visa and she kind of finally got to move to Canada, so she's a little closer.
Oh, that's
but
nice.
there's, yeah, it was great. You know, he was telling me and he was crying. It was an emotional moment for both of us. You know, I felt for him, but most of the time he and I strictly speak Punjabi. I speak Punjabi to my mother still, even though she's been here since 1978 and speaks perfect English. I still speak Punjabi to her.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a connection that me and Sutton have, and you know, it. Hopefully, he can feel a little more home when he's around me at work.
Yeah, listen, when me and my Canadian buddies all get together and talk about our packs of Molson 2-4s, it makes me feel a little more at home. I love it.
Exactly.
Let's talk about Sutton a little bit, though, because like he is a grade A human being. Really enjoy him. I mean, even before I was working for AEW, anytime I would be there, I just feel like there's a warmth about him that you want to like hang out with him. You want to have those conversations. Anytime I have my daughter there, he's always trying to grab her and she's like,
yes,
no!
He's the best.
She
it's
actually
a legit monster.
So we had Nora out with us when we were in Newark. My mom maybe had Nora out by the ring and she wanted to get up to see John. And Sutton came and picked her up and handed her over to John, like just like swooped her up and handed her up into the ring to John. And she didn't know who was grabbing her. She turned around. She was like, oh my gosh. But he's just, there's like that.
He's a Shrek.
Yeah. There's just like, there's such a sweetness to him. I truly adore him. What has your experience been like working with him? I mean, obviously the things that you just kind of rattled off, but.
I love him. I love him as a person. I love him as a professional. Me and him have obviously this bond where we're both from the same place with the same background. We speak the same language. And there's not many of us in professional wrestling. That connection kind of brings us together right off the bat. We have this connection and he wants to excel at this. You know, he really wants to excel at this. And Lethal and I have kind of taken a hand in kind of cultivating his in-ring stuff whenever we can. Anytime there's tag matches with he and Lethal, he hasn't had a singles match. So we're getting to that point, but I think we're getting real close. Anything we show him, anything we tell him, he soaks it up. He utilizes the stuff that we tell him to utilize. Hey, do this differently. And I didn't think that that would be the case. I've worked with other Indian giants in WWE, and that was not the case at all. So, you know, experience this with him. It's cool because I always tell people, yes, he's 7'4". Yes, he's a giant or whatever we want to call somebody of that stature. And he's got size 20 feet, but he's an athlete. Like that's the difference between him and anybody else that of his size that has gotten into professional wrestling. He's a legitimate athlete. So anything that we show him or tell him, bam, he pulls it off. And I love that. And I think that he's got such a bright future in wrestling. He's 26, Renee. Let's not forget that. He is a kid. So I always kind of keep that in the back of my mind every week when you know, we're kind of talking with him that, hey, he's still a kid. He's 26 and he's soaking in this new world that he probably had no clue about before he stepped in it. So for him to excel this quick in something that he probably never even watched as a child, that says a lot about his character and his athletic prowess.
What are you having him watch? What's some of like the tape that you're getting Sutton to view? I mean, I can imagine some of the obvious, but.
I will say this. Paul White has taken obviously a kind of an interest in Sutton and they have kind of.
You got that giant heat. Don't get that giant heat.
But they've kind of hit it off. When it comes to like tape study and stuff, I tell Sutton, whatever Paul tells you, just listen and do that. So, and I appreciate Paul taking that time and effort and energy that he expends with Sutton because there's some days where Lethal and I just don't have a chance to get in the ring with him, but Paul does. So I've kind of told Sutton, hey, Paul will be your ticket to success if you just listen to what he's telling you to do. He is experienced. If there's anybody in AEW that can empathize and sympathize with Sutton's issues and problems and kind of excelling at something like this, it's Paul.
Oh, 100%. I mean, what are the odds of being able to like show up somewhere and you've got Paul White there to be like, oh, I can actually tell you exactly how all of this stuff works and what's going to work for you, what's not, et cetera.
Exactly. So that's why I tell Sutton a lot of times is, look, Lethal and I will tell you our perspective, but our perspective is going to be way different than his. His perspective and his insight will be more centered and geared to you. So whenever he wants to sit with you, just sit down and listen and soak it all in.
The learning tree of show, get up under it. It's a place to be. For you to be reunited with Jay Lethal, what were those like first few moments like of you guys being like back in business together?
When he first got here, it took, I would say maybe 4 or 5 months before we got linked together on television. Those first 4 or 5 months that he was here, I was just like happy that my best friend in life is here next to me and we get to travel. And before that, you know, it was once a month he would fly here and spend the week, or I would fly to Tampa. So now it was like, hey, we don't got to do any of that. Just we'll see each other every Wednesday, you know? So, everything that I say about him, on TV is true. He's a godfather of my kids. He's my best friend. He's my family. So then when Tony comes to me and says, hey, I got an idea. I want you to manage Lethal on camera. I was like, what in the hell are you talking about, man? And he says, go ahead. I got another idea. I'm going to put you with Sutton Singh. I said, what? The 7'4" giant basketball player? I said, okay, let's fucking go. And I'll be honest, if it wasn't Lethal and if it wasn't Sutton, I probably would have told Tony, no, thank you. I had no aspirations to be in front of the camera. Not something that I ever wanted to do. I knew that that was behind me, but to work alongside my best friend in life and to help a fellow countryman such as Sutnam, kind of be the key to, the success of professional wrestling in India moving forward, sign me up. It's awesome. It's not work, man. It's so much fun. I'm looking at a picture of Lethal right now, you know, so it's fun. Just I'm with my best friend. That's not work, man. Being alongside those guys, I couldn't have wrote this story, man. It's indescribable how actually fun and happy and fulfilled I am to be out there with him.
Okay, we are officially recording, guys. Brody King here on the Sessions podcast. It's happening. I'm pumped about this. But you just hopped on the Zoom call. You just dropped your kids off to school. What a doozy it is getting out the house with kids, huh? Like, what is happening? Well, it takes like a lot of like emotional endurance. You've got to be able to carry as many things as possible. Like, it's a shit show out there. How was your experience this morning?
Today was pretty smooth sailing. I mean, really, the only hiccup is that they wanted waffles before they went to school, but I feel like you have to account for at least an hour before you have to do something. You know, if they have to be at school at 10, you got to get up at 8:30 and start everything. You got to be up at 8:30 just to mentally prepare yourself for what's to come.
You need to give yourself like that mental prep time. The other day I was, everything just hit the fan. Like our nanny wasn't able to be here. So like I just scrapped my day, which was like totally fine. I was happy to do it. I love being able to like hang out with my kid, obviously. But I was like, let's go on a hike. Let's get out of the house. I was near tears by the time I got in the car. I was like, we need to get some boots on you. We need a jacket. I need to pack some snacks. I need to bring all these things. So I'm like, and I think it's like the city person in me that does not like to make multiple trips in and out of the house. I want to do it all in one go, which just stacks the odds against me. I'm like 6 water bottles, 10 jackets, a backpack. Like I had all this stuff. And then I got out to like our driveway and John's truck was just parked too close to mine. So I could not get Nora in the car seat. I nearly flipped my shit.
Yeah, those little things that just make you a full mental collapse. And it's like, this was not that big of a deal.
I know, you get in the car and everything's settled and you're like, you've already flipped your shit. You're like, okay, time to just compose. And then I think I'm like, did any of my neighbors just see me like storming in and out of the house, having a meltdown?
That happened to me last week or the week before. It was raining, so I got them all ready. They were waiting to get in the car. I had their snacks and milk, and I was going to the car to put it in. And my daughter was about to take a step out onto the porch with her socks on. So yeah. I like hopped back up on the porch and I just ate shit. Like my foot came out and I just full back bumped on the porch. Cereal went fucking everywhere. Then it's just like, I'm trying to like not like lose my shit that moment. So I just like stood there and was like, I uploaded the video to TikTok. So, you know, ring cameras are good for one thing, and that's for people falling on the porch.
Oh my God. That you put that up, you posted it?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I missed it. I need to see that. That's amazing. Oh my God. I love it. It's so funny too when like that moment happens and you're just like, you don't even get mad. You just kind of sit there stewing in your rage. That's when it's really, really bad. I feel like I can't picture you actually getting mad. What does mad Brody look like?
You know, I feel like most people can't picture me being happy, which is why it throws them off when I'm in public.
It's funny, kind of like leading up to this interview. And as I'm like always trying to like book guests, figure out what we're doing on the show, blah, blah, blah. Like so many people are like, you got to get Brody King on. Like, I feel like you are like a favorite of the boys. Everyone loves you.
Well, that's awesome. I appreciate that. I mean, I just have, I don't know, I have some good stories and I have a lot of life experience, I guess.
That's true. You do. Yeah. I mean, I don't know these stories firsthand and we're going to get into them. But yeah, you are a very layered fellow. So that being said, let's start with a little God's Hate, your band. How walk me through the hardcore music scene and what like your love of that is, creating a band. Because as much as like I've been in and around it, I understand to a degree the hardcore music scene. But I want to know from your perspective where like that love comes from.
Music has always been around. My dad listened to like Black Sabbath and like heavier alternative music like Rage Against the Machine, Tool, stuff like that. When I was in middle school, so this was like 97, 98, 99-ish, when I started getting into like punk rock music. So I started getting into bands like Rancid, Black Flag, AFI, Offspring. That kind of like forged my pathway through like finding punk rock and like all those ethos behind it. And then I also liked, you know, metal music like Slipknot and stuff like that, which hardcore music is kind of like both of those melded together. And it's just a more aggressive punk, more violent punk rock, if you will. And that kind of always spoke to me. And then when I was in high school, like that, I really started going to like local hardcore shows and punk rock shows. And, you know, I found Straight Edge through hardcore music. And
what is the correlation between that, between hardcore music and Straight Edge?
I mean, it was created in hardcore music.
Okay. I didn't know that. I honestly mostly know about the Straight Edge lifestyle through professional wrestling and obviously the guys that are associated with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, obviously, you know, people don't drink and do drugs all the time. We're like the common misconception, like when people are like, oh, I'm kind of Straight Edge. It's like, no, you're not. It's like, it's more of like an ethos and like a badge of honor than it is like, you know, this is what I am. It's like, this is like how I live my life type thing. And it comes from, you know, the ethos of punk rock and hardcore music. So it's like when a normal person is like, I'm Straight Edge, you're like, yeah, okay.
No, you cannot be a part-timer Straight Edger. You're either in or you're out. Shit or get off the pot.
And from there on, it was just kind of all-consuming. I mean, I've been in and out of bands for 10 years.
Always hardcore?
Always hardcore, yeah. I met my wife through it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Up until wrestling, hardcore was my life.
So I was watching some of the videos like of your band, of you guys doing like live shows and stuff. Like, it is very physical. Uh-huh. Holy shit. Like, and you're saying like, oh, you like meet friends there and it's like this really great environment. I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'd get my ass kicked if I was there. Like, how do you like physically, I mean, obviously on the physical side of things, as a professional wrestler, you know what you're getting into, but you were having people like grabbing at like your neck and like launching themselves into the crowd. Like, you're dodging people left, right, and center. Like, that's pretty nuts. You get like beat up at those shows?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that get beat up at those shows, but
oh my God.
Somebody put it this way the other day. They're like, it's a safe space to do very unsafe things. And that was like, you know, if it wasn't for hardcore and punk rock music, I'm pretty sure that I would have ended up somewhere much less enjoyable. You know, because you can go to these places and you can get out that angst or whatever emotion that you have in you. And like, if you get in a fight that night, that's what happens. If, you know, you can release yourself how you feel you need to, kind of. Within, you know, there is like obviously sort of like guidelines and rules to it, but like it's all very loose. From an outsider looking in, you just see a bunch of people basically fighting each other. You know, I've been knocked out by like some of my best friends, and it's just like you just get up, brushed off, and you keep going.
Like, I saw this one dude like in the circle of all of the chaos happening, and he's just like twirling around and like throwing basically Judas effects to everybody. I'm like, this, what's this guy doing? It's crazy. But hey, you found your spot. Love is love. And it's great. I was curious watching like how that all exists, how you fell into it. So great. What else are you listening to?
So my main things are pop music, like my yearly Wrapped Spotify.
Oh, what was on there? What is on your yearly Wrapped?
Number one was Dua Lipa.
Me too. I don't know if she was my number one, but she was definitely ranked for me. I loved that Dua Lipa album. It's so good.
Yeah, and my kids are like obsessed with Cold Heart, her and Elton John. So that like it's like all the time. But yeah, I think my top five were like Dua Lipa, AFI, and then just hardcore music. So it's like E-Town Concrete, Gridiron, King Nine, stuff like that.
I just got buzzed on the little chat here on our Zoom call that you're a big Harry Styles guy. Is this true?
I do like Harry Styles, actually. Yeah.
Who doesn't? What a dreamboat that guy is, huh?
Very hot.
He is such a babe. There's like that like androgynous charm about him. Plus being British just adds to that. His fashion is amazing. Songs are great. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan of people that piss off normal people. So it's like him dresses and everyone is like, you can't do that. It's like, why not?
Yeah, walk the red carpet and own that shit. It looks great. While we're talking Harry Styles, do you think that he spat on Chris Pine at the thing? What do you think was all the drama with Don't Worry, Darling?
I don't know much about it. I just know that he was like seemingly having like a mental collapse in like the press release of that.
Or just like everybody was. So bizarre.
Maybe that movie just pushed a lot of people to their limit.
Did you see that movie?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
So you worked in the film industry for quite some time, yeah? What did you do?
15 years, yeah. I was a set lighting technician based in Hollywood. My dad did it. My grandfather did it.
Wow. What movies did you work on? Drop some names. Give me some of the goods.
I worked on like all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. I worked, like a bunch of Marvel movies. A lot of TV shows. RuPaul's Drag Race.
Wow. These are like the name drops of name drops.
Yeah, I got to do some cool stuff.
Who was your favorite person to work for or like being on set with? And like, you know, you mentioned some of these like movies, shows and whatever. Those are like some big name stars. It's always really interesting being around people like of that stature, people that like still remain really impressive when you see them on a set like that. Who are some of the people that were like really cool to be around?
Johnny Depp is really awesome. Like he's very social and like the production crew tells you like not to talk to him because he won't stop talking to you.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks was really cool. Like there's definitely a lot of cool people. And then like the people that you would think are cool are just like not at all.
Were there conversations that you were having with people when you're like kind of rubbing elbows and shooting the shit like this that like professional wrestling gets brought up?
Sometimes. Yeah. It was funny because when I was in Ring of Honor, I was working on the show The Neighborhood that's currently on CBS, I think, Cedric the Entertainer show. A couple of the people that are on that show, a couple of cast members, found out that I was a wrestler and they were just like super interested in that. This is like right when I got signed to Ring of Honor. So I had a couple indie dates. There was a GCW show in LA and I was like, hey, do you guys want to come out to a wrestling show? And they're like, sure. So
what a show to bring them to. Come on out to GCW, MDK, baby.
It gets better. So they come to the show and it was the show that David Arquette wrestled Nick Gage.
Oh, no. Stop. Oh, my God. So what they must have freaked being like, oh, we know David Arquette. Great. Let's watch this. Cut to like 10 minutes later.
Yeah, I don't think that they realized that like David like almost died in the match, but like they were like, that was insane. Like, I can't believe David Arquette was here. And like, then they were like also like, you know, blown away by like me being a wrestler. So it's like, you know, we go back to set. They're like bragging to like Cedric, to like, yo, like, you got to check it out. And it was funny because like, this was at the time where like AEW, I think, first started getting TV and first started kind of blowing up, you know, to everybody. And they were like, yo, you got to get on this AEW stuff. And I was like, yeah, no, I want to. Like, it was funny. And like now, like we still follow each other on social media. And it's like when I got announced for AEW, they were just like, yo, what's up? Like kind of gave me props for that.
So being a performer yourself, then also working like behind the scenes on all these shows and stuff, like what kind of inspiration were you able to draw from sitting? I know those are like long, kind of boring days, but when you're like kind of watching those people work and like the who's who work, were you able to like pull some inspiration from some of that?
Not really. I don't know. I guess like it just like knowing that anything is possible. Like you, I kind of like, I feel like I know how to make most things with less, whether it be like set designing or like prop building, stuff like that. Like there's always a way to do something without a budget. For instance, the other day, like I had to make like a sponsored video for somebody. And I was like, I need to make this look cool. And it's just like in the middle of my basement, I just took like this old china cabinet I have and then like an old card table and I put some like LED lights into it. And it's like, everyone's like, where were you? Like, it looks like a Western like saloon. I'm like, oh, I was just in my basement. So it's like, you know, you just make it work with whatever, because you have to be on the fly and like you have to make things work quickly in the movie industry.
In the wrestling industry, set wise, what are some things that you would like to spice up? Are the things on like the main set, like from like the tunnels that you walk out, something there that you think could look really cool, or even on like the backstage set? Are those conversations that you've had at all with Tony?
No, not really. I mean, like, I feel like, you know, stuff like at like the fan fest and stuff, I feel like we can really, there's a lot of room for improvement there just to like give the fans a better experience of like not just having like concrete walls and stuff. I feel like, you know, pipe and drape goes a long ways and, you know, filling the empty space, you know, if there's just like a wrestling ring in the middle of a giant room, it helps a lot. You know, for Shark Week, we had the giant shark cage and there was like some like aquatic stuff like on the stage. I feel like, you know, for the theme shows, we could do more stuff like that. It just adds something else to look at and something else to like, be like, oh, that's different.
I feel like you need to have like two contracts. I think you need to have like the pro wrestler contract, but then also like on like the set design team. Get the man paid.
I'm open.
Okay. So you're in the hardcore music scene. That started pretty early on for you. You said like, you know, 96, 97, 98, somewhere in there. You're a third generation set designer, lighting, all of that. When did pro wrestling sort of make its way into your world?
When I was 26 years old.
Okay. Okay.
Basically, I was doing set lighting. I was touring with my band. You know, I was making good money, but I didn't like love my job. You know, at the end of the day, it's like you said, it's long hours, very physical. It's in a nutshell, it's basically just construction.
It's a thankless job too, right?
I feel like every crew guy, when I'm like walking out, I try to thank like all of them that I walk by and they all just look at me like, was he talking to me? You know, I just want them to know, like, yeah. I've been on this side. I know how it is. Like, you guys are doing a great job. And I feel like a lot of my peers maybe don't think about that on a daily basis. Like, these guys are making, you know, a normal living wage and, like, working their asses off. And they're there before we're there and they're after we're there. So it's like, they definitely deserve more praise, I feel like.
And it's not like their local crew that's hired, right? These are guys that are still traveling the same as everybody else is. They're away from their family. I mean, yes, sometimes there is local crew brought in there, obviously. But like a lot of times it's like those behind the scenes crew people are, yeah, they're traveling the same grueling schedule that everybody else is.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, these are the guys that, you know, in the heat of the moment, you're barking orders at and then they just make it happen. So it's like, give them a little thank you on the way out.
Honestly. For real, give a little love to those guys.
So yeah, I was doing set lighting, not really loving my job. I was with my wife. We've been together for almost 11 years now. You know, she kind of was with me through the whole thing. I started set lighting when I was 18. So it's like I started very young, and making adult money when you're very young is not always the best thing. And I think that a lot of pro wrestlers can vouch for that as well. It's like, you're just kind of a shithead. You think you know everything and like you burn a lot of bridges. And then like when you move out of your parents' house and you get real bills and then you're like, oh, fuck, like the phone's not ringing as much as it should be. I need to start, you know, making amends and putting my head to the grindstone. And I started like figuring it out. I bought a house and like we were doing great. And then I was just, one of my friends started his girlfriend was an in-arena host for the LA Kings.
Is this Carlin?
It is Carlin, yeah.
Love her. What a dreamboat that chick is. Big fan.
So Carlin's doing in-arena hosting. She meets this older wrestler, and he was like, basically, hey, if your boyfriend wants to, you know, run the ropes, take a bump, whatever, I know a school that I can take him to. And her boyfriend, Colin, is my best friend. One day he's posting photos of him running the ropes, and I'm like, how are you doing this? It's like, pro wrestling was like probably my first love, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, He-Man, and pro wrestling. That was like, so it's like, I always used to say, like, I wanted to be a pro wrestler when I grew up. Like when I was in high school or junior high, people would be talking about whatever. And I'm like, I want to be a pro wrestler. It's like, but I never knew the steps to take to get there. I didn't know the pro wrestling schools. And then, like, you know, when you kind of start to grow up, like that kind of goes to the back of your mind and you don't think about it as much. But that like kind of sparked an interest. I was just like, well, I want to try this just to try it. So we went to our local wrestling show. It was Santino Brothers Wrestling Academy, and they were having a student showcase. And the next day I signed up for their beginner's class.
When you think of like the base of it, of like, oh, I want to be a pro wrestler, but like, how the hell does somebody actually accomplish that? If it's not a thing that's right in front of you and tracking down the schools and then like actually putting in the work to do that, it's not this hobbyist kind of thing. You're like really seeking that out. I find that really fascinating of like what those first steps are, that first day, taking that first bump, finding the first person that like really took you under their wing. Like I find all that stuff so fascinating.
My pro wrestling experience was, I feel like, very old school. My trainer, Joey Chaos, he never wants to put out a product that isn't ready to do an entire match. So I can't call a match, call on the fly, stuff like that. So my pro wrestling training was about a year and a half before I had my first match. And even then I felt like I wasn't ready. So it's like, you know, I know that there's a lot of kids that go to like these like 3 month schools or whatever. And then they're like working on TV. I'm like, oh boy, I would have been scared shitless. But yeah, those first days were like definitely eye opening. You know, obviously the cardio, the physicality, like the physicality was fine. Like as far as like taking chops, forearms, bumping, like stuff like that, I've done that forever. Like you said, I'm getting hit in a mosh pit, diving off the stage into nobody. It's like, yeah, I'll take a bump. We started like learning dives. Like my lucha coach was like, hey, who wants to try it first? And I was like, oh, I'll do it. And I just did like a toe pick on heel, like a flip dive over the top, like right away. He's like, how do you know how to do this? And like, we started talking and it turns out that my lucha coach was actually like in hardcore bands.
Who knew that was such a transferable skill?
Exactly. I mean, I didn't at the time. And then it's like the selling yourself as a professional, like all these things I learned from punk and hardcore music. So those lessons were truly invaluable. And I didn't realize at the time that I was, you know, learning these things that were going to like set me up kind of for the rest of my life.
Yeah, no, it's so funny how like certain things, like it's almost like the seeds are like planted and then it all just kind of comes together like in that big like Oprah aha moment. Which leads to you working with Malachi now as well, like working with House of Black, you guys just kind of like re-emerged on the scene. What was that time like for you guys not being on TV and having that little bit of a break?
I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to take a break because I felt like I had a lot of momentum at the time, but not just that. I felt like I was really getting in my groove in AEW and like really showing like who Brody King, the professional wrestler, was. I got to wrestle Darby twice. I got to wrestle John. And it's like, I feel like those three matches really put me on the map, like where people were just like, oh, he's just like Malachi's sidekick, to like, oh shit, he's like a threat. And those were the moments that I was waiting for. It was never like me questioning if I could do it. It's like when I can do it. And I feel like that it all came at the right time. And I was worried about it taking the momentum away, but we made this return and it was awesome. And the whole crowd was like standing on their feet. And I feel like it was almost like we didn't miss a step. And I feel like that's really rare in wrestling because fans are so, I don't want to say fickle, but like they forget about you quickly. For them to give us that reception was awesome.
I think of like when you debuted with AEW and like what a huge reception you got. I do feel like you like landed on the scene. Everyone was like, oh shit, Brody King's here. This is amazing. And then like seeing you paired up with Malakai just made like perfect sense. Like I definitely don't think people thought that you were just his sidekick, but for you to be able to have those singles matches and yeah, really kind of like solidify yourself, plant your flag was fantastic. So with House of Black, what do you guys want to accomplish? What's the plan?
Us versus everyone, you know? Kind of like how we live our lives outside of the world. Like me and Malakai both come from hardcore music. He kind of dips more into like black metal and stuff like that. Whereas I stay more kind of in my lane in hardcore punk and like death metal adjacent.
Does he do like Scandinavian death metal? Does he stay more like European with it?
Like as far as like black metal, that's like a little out of my range and I just don't really care for it. But the aesthetics of it are really awesome, and which is where we draw a lot of inspiration from as well. We have like the same thought process when it comes to like the world and like how we conduct ourselves. And like, you know, we're very much on the same page when it comes to that. So it makes it easy when we're coming up with like concepts of like how we want to look, how we want to present ourselves. And I feel like when it comes to AEW, we are delivering a product that they don't have. And I feel like wrestling, we're delivering a product that nobody has. There's people that have like the spooky gimmick or whatever you want to call it, but it's like, this is authentic to us. Like this isn't us putting on a costume, pretending to like the music that we like. We have deep knowledge on all things of what we're doing. You know, Malakai reads all these weird old books on witchcraft and like black magic and stuff. And it's like, I'm constantly reading comic books and play Magic the Gathering and listen to alternative music. So it's like, we never want to present something that we are not actually involved in.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed the week, enjoyed the best of the sessions. You guys can hear the full-length interviews anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Just download them, give them a listen, give them a like, a review. And if you want to see what you're hearing, head on over to my YouTube page. Just search Renee Paquette. It's all up there. And you can see us talking, having this interview, having a hangout. It's all up on there. And that's been like a really great, cool, growing community. So I'm really enjoying the hangouts on the YouTube as well. So we can see you guys over there. And jump in the comment section, you know. Jump in, chime in, leave a comment. We like filtering through them all, reading about them, maybe even like, I don't know, some constructive criticism if you had it. We're all ears. God, did I open up a can of worms by saying that? I don't know. Be nice. Be cool in there. This has been The Sessions.